This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Asia-Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia-Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
All views of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia-Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. It is 9 o'clock. I'm Giselle Hannah.
And I'm Diana Beaumont. Thanks for joining us once again. The program is produced by Australia Asia Worker Links. And if you'd like any more information about any of the stories that we're going to bring you today, go to our website. It's aawl.org.au or give us a call during the week. Oh my God, I was going to say the 3CR number, 9663-7277.
Oh, it happens to the best of us, Diana. Coming up in the second part of the program, our feature interview today is Chi Matsumoto. And Chi, for those of you who don't know, is a trade unionist and an anti-nuclear campaigner in Japan. The 11th of March, for comrades who recall, was the second anniversary of the explosion or the mega quake tsunami at Fukushima power plant that resulted in the nuclear disaster in Japan. So we're going to have a catch up with Chi about what's happening on the anti-nukes front in Japan. But first up, news from around the region.
And we begin this morning in China, where we have more news from the Honda factories, where high-profile strikes broke out in 2010. Our listeners might remember that wave of strikes in the auto sector. But this week, there's been another successful strike at the Honda factory in Nanhai, South China. The workers were unhappy with the latest pay deal announced by management and their workplace trade union that would have given them just an average 10.2% pay increase. And that has to be seen in the context of very rapid inflation in China. Unhappy with that, the workers took wildcat strike action once again for a whole day in protest. Management then increased its offer to 14.4% a year, in addition to an increase in the housing subsidy. So that day-long strike brought a victory for the workers. And we can see that the militants demonstrated at this Honda factory in 2010 seems to be entrenched now in this workplace. And given the high profile of this factory, this may be an example to other workers in China's auto sector.
And also in China, violence has broken out around land privatisation in another Chinese village where residents are resisting the confiscation of their land to build a private factory. Chinese security forces fired tear gas and beat protesters in the southern village of Shangpu in Guangdong province. The villagers had rallied to protest the lease of 33 hectares of rice paddies to a firm called Wanfeng for 50 years to build a private electric cable factory. Dozens of villagers were taken to hospital in Mianhu town and Jiayang city, and 5 people were arrested. The land deal was backed by thuggery earlier in the year. In late February, several hundred men armed with steel pipes and spades threatened the 3,000-strong village to accept the land deal. Villagers, however, retaliated, chasing the men away and destroyed over 20 of their jeeps and cars. The situation in Shangpu is similar to that of another high-profile standoff over land seizures in Wukam village, about an hour's drive away, that openly revolted for several months over murky land sales in 2011.
And in that case, in Wukan, actually one of the leaders of that, the resistance movement, then actually became an elected leader of the village. So that's quite a significant political case. But moving now to Korea. There have been 2 significant Supreme Court rulings, one against General Motors and Daewoo, and one against Kmart for illegally using dispatch workers. General Motors Daewoo has been fined by the Korean Supreme Court for the illegal use of dispatch workers. And in 2010, Hyundai, another auto manufacturer, was also fined by the Supreme Court for illegally employing dispatch workers. Unfortunately, the amount of the fines is very small, only 7 million won in the case of GM Daewoo, which is about $6,500. But hopefully these court cases can be used to support the work of the KMU, the Korean Metal Workers Union, that is organising outsourced and casualised workers in the sector.
That's really interesting because also that's consistent with some landmark cases in the Japanese courts where Mitsubishi, we reported last week, Mitsubishi had a loss in the court around its employment of casualised staff and failing to move them onto permanent contracts. But still in Korea, today we have more details on that breaking story that we brought you last week about the chemical factory explosion in Korea. 7 workers were killed and 13 injured when a polyethylene chemical plant exploded in a residential area in Yeosu, South Jeolla Province. However, many workers were severely burnt, so the number of deaths is expected to rise. The workers had been engaged in welding when the tank storing the plastic polyethylene exploded. This isn't the first time that workers have been killed by explosions at this particular factory. A similar explosion killed one person at the complex in 2003.
An absolutely tragic case and a reminder that lax occupational health and safety standards in industries like the chemical one can be absolutely disastrous. So our condolences go out to the workers and their families and everyone affected by that. Moving now to Malaysia, where bosses in small and medium enterprises have won their campaign to force a delay in the implementation of the new minimum wage laws until December 31st this year. Employer groups had tried to dodge the law for even longer, asking for an exemption for 2 years, but that was rejected. The minimum wage for private sector employees in Malaysia has been set at 800 to 900 ringgits per month, which is Australian $245 to $275, but employers are still unwilling to pay it. And last week we reported on very similar events in Thailand, where employers are also mobilising to oppose new minimum wage laws there. So an example of how progress in legislating for improved payments, improved working conditions, meets enormous resistance from capitalists across the region.
But also that we're not going to win this battle in the courts. We're going to win it on the ground. And there is no substitute for educating, mobilising and winning workers over to this struggle and creating a mass movement. In India, more news from the Maruti Suzuki struggle. 13 of the 151 incarcerated Maruti Suzuki India workers have filed affidavits in court accusing top officers in the Haryana State Police and senior MSI managers of colluding in their torture, assault and kidnapping and of threatening to kill them. The 13 filing the claim includes all 10 office bearers in the Maruti Suzuki Workers Union. The 13 and most of the 138 jailed Maruti Suzuki workers have been languishing in prison for the past 7 months on criminal charges, including murder, after protests in the factory that resulted in the death of one of the managers.
And the head of the Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions is also facing persecution. He's facing trial and a possible 5 years in jail for organising a strike and demonstration at the state-owned South Oil Company in February this year. Workers at the South Oil Company had taken strike action to protest the non-payment of benefits from 2010, 11 and 12, as well as to demand the right to housing, permanent employment contracts and an end to corruption at the company. But now the head of the Iraqi Federation of Oil Unions, Hassan Jumaya, faces a possible 5 years in prison if found guilty of organising the strike and demonstrations. He will go on trial on the 7th of April. This court case reflects the government of Iraq's intention to repress trade union activities in the key oil sector. The South Oil Company, where the strike took place, produces more than 80% of Iraq's oil and is responsible for all of the oil in the south of Iraq. So we can understand why the state is going to great measures to repress trade union activity there.
The Australian federal government made progress this week towards eradicating asbestos and asbestos-related deaths in Australia. The government introduced a bill into Parliament this week to create the independent agency which will coordinate, monitor and report on the implementation of the National Strategic Plan to get rid of asbestos, as well as run public awareness campaigns. The plan involves the audit of all commercial and government buildings to rid them of asbestos by 2030. Introduction of asbestos content reports on homes built before 1987, and new standards to ensure commercial operators extract and dispose of the lethal substance safely. The agency is a result of years of union campaigning. And of course, that's probably the best thing we could say about Australian politics in the last week. but a significant development, of course, you know, looking at the other stories that we brought you about health and safety for workers, it truly is a victory for the Australian union movement that we've managed to make such progress on the issue of asbestos.
But that's all we've got time for this morning on our news roundup. It's 12 minutes past nine here on 3CR Community Radio, and you're listening to Asia Pacific Currents. We're taking a quick break now, and after the break, we'll be bringing you a live interview about the campaign against the nuclear sector in Japan.
The future of community broadcasters like us is digital. This is now under threat, but you can help. Let the federal government know it must guarantee a digital future for community radio. Join the campaign at committocommunityradio.org.au. Community radio. Stand up for our future.
If you haven't been watching Channel 31, you've been missing out. Channel 31 is not your average television station. We're your local Melbourne community TV station. With over 120 new programs weekly, Channel 31 is leading the way with quality, diverse programs every month. We have a mass of Melburnians creating great shows across our amazing city. Switch on to Channel 31. There's something for everyone.
Looking for the latest news and analysis in Aboriginal affairs? Getting the most up-to-date and relevant Aboriginal news can be challenging. Mainstream media is hit and miss when it comes to Aboriginal issues. Thankfully, there's a monthly Aboriginal rights-based journal that fills the gaps. It's called Tracker Magazine. Be it the arts, sport, opinion, or Tracker's famous feature stories, you definitely won't be left out of the loop with Tracker. Contact the Tracker team on 02 9689 4454, or visit tracker.org.au. Tracker Magazine, a 3CR supporter.
The Ceres Community Environment Park 2013 Autumn Harvest Festival takes place on Saturday, 23rd of March. Would you like to be a stall holder at the festival market? We are looking for local people and businesses who are artisans, second-hand sellers, community organisations and groups who work within sustainable food systems. For more information, go to ceres.org.au or call 9389 0188. The Ceres 2013 Harvest Festival is a 3CR supporter.
And you're listening to to Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm Giselle Hannah, and Diana is also in the studio with us. But now it's time for our feature interview for this morning with Chia Matsumoto. People in Japan are still suffering the effects of the nuclear disaster that resulted from the mega quake tsunami of March 2011 and the meltdown of the Fukushima power plant. Around 40,000 people protested on the second anniversary, which was on the 11th of March, demonstrating that the anti-nuclear movement is alive and well. Now, anti-nuclear activists had set up a tent embassy on the premises of the Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry are being threatened with eviction. Joining us this morning on the show is trade unionist and anti-nuclear campaigner in Japan, Chiya Matsumoto. Welcome, Chiya.
Hi.
Well, look, let's start with looking at the size of the nuclear industry in Japan, just so that we can appreciate what we're dealing with in terms of the resistance movement there. So how big is the industry?
Japan has 54 nuclear reactors throughout a very small island. And there are, people say that at Fukushima Daiichi plant, which is in trouble right now, there are about 3,000 people working per day. And right now, most of the reactors in Japan are suspended, except for two. So you can kind of imagine maybe about 1,000 people working per reactor, per plant, sorry.
And what is the state of the Fukushima power plant at the moment?
It's still very, very unstable. We receive news stories every day. There's little mishaps here and there. Just a couple of days ago, this was just amazing. It's been already 2 years, but still, of course, it's only 2 years. It's been only 2 years since the earthquake. But TEPCO still has the electric distributor, electricity distributor at the plant, only temporarily. This is only temporarily set up distributor. And apparently there was a power outage, which is a very serious issue at the at this point and at any nuclear reactor. But so power went out for more than a day. And of course they needed to cool, they needed electricity to cool down the fuel and everything. But they found out that it was a rat that went into the distributor. And because the power sparked, it suddenly had a large current and it went out. So this is one of the things that we still hear about. And we just heard from people in Fukushima yesterday that they were, when they heard this news, they were so, they were very alert and they had full tank of gas and ready to get out of the area, out of their house. And so we have to be prepared for the next big thing. It could happen anytime because of the instability of the plant right now.
It is remarkable that given the size of the catastrophe that there aren't greater precautions being taken in relation to Fukushima. And I mean, you did mention it is only 2 years, and in some respects that's a long time, and in some respects it's not very long at all. In relation to side effects and particularly health side effects from a nuclear spillage, is it too early to start seeing the consequences of that on the people?
Well, most of us think that no, it isn't. It's not too late. Too early. We've already seen abnormalities on thyroid glands on children under 18. They have conducted several tests, health checks in Fukushima area, and this is what they've found. But of course, people like us or people in Fukushima area, they are very concerned about this result. But of course, the testing agency, they said, the committee said that, of course, it could have been there before the nuclear accident. And so they always find this excuse. And we always look back to the Chernobyl incident. And they say it took 5-10 years before these health abnormalities have started to come out. So anything that's found before that is nothing that's related to nuclear disaster, they say.
And now, I mean, I wanted to look inside the plant, and you mentioned the issue of the rat being discovered as the most recent cause of some instability at Fukushima, and certainly that power outage that there's been a lot of media about. I know I've also read those reports, and I know it's resulted in quite a significant impact on the morale and on the conditions for those workers. Are you able to tell us any more about what it's what conditions are like inside Fukushima for those 3,000 workers in there?
I've recently talked to one who used to work there, and he said that the radiation level in the premises is not too high. Of course, they do have to wear the protective gear and everything. But I think there is a reactor, a specific reactor that's still unstable. And of course, in that reactor number three, for instance, you can't get anywhere near it. And so it is, of course, there is always high level of radiation in some areas of the premises that measures high. But it's not only limited to the nuclear plants or Fukushima Daiichi at this moment. Of course, the radiation has spread, and there are thousands and thousands of workers trying to decontaminate the area in the special no-go zones, so that people can come back to live. And this is one issue that we hear every day too. There's been workers who are not protected enough, even when they are working in area with high level of radiation, and they also have to stay there because they work there for weeks at a time, so they're constantly exposed to radiation.
And now looking then at the nuclear industry in Japan and the resistance to it, because what you've described is pretty shocking. And, you know, like if that was the case in Australia, I don't know how Australians would respond to it, but I know that there's a strong resistance in Japan. Can you tell us a little bit about the anti-nukes movement there?
As you've mentioned earlier on, we have had a rally, or several rallies actually, not just in Tokyo but throughout Japan, where thousands of people got together to protest and to speak up against nuclear power. And although it's been 2 years, it's still going on strong, and we hope that it's spreading. There's, as you've heard, there's Friday protest every week in Tokyo. But this has actually took on to spread out throughout Japan. So even small scale or large scale, it depends on the locations. But there are people who are mobilized to do this and to protest to show their protest. And just yesterday too, as you mentioned earlier, the tent city, the anti-nuclear Occupy tent, which is set up at Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry, we have received an eviction notice from the court. And as soon as we informed everyone of this news, hundreds of them gathered yesterday to protect the tent. Of course, it's not going to happen right away, but you can see that there is still interest and there is still people who are trying to make it happen this time for sure.
Well, that's interesting about the evictions, because right across the world around those Occupy movements, we saw massive evictions of the tents and of the occupiers. And it's interesting that Japan's tent embassy, so to speak, has managed to sustain itself for 2 years. What is happening with the eviction? Is it likely that the tent embassy is going to have to close down, or is there quite a commitment from the people to just hold their ground there?
The eviction notice, actually, which is set up, it's a document, so it's set up at the tent. It's posted for everyone to see. They have actually picked two representative members of the tent who were new anti-nuclear activists, and the court actually, of course, the METI asked the court to issue this order.
So METI is the Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry, yes?
Yes.
Yep.
And so the tent has received this eviction notice, and it says, of course, the property that the tent is set up is of the IMETI, of the ministry, and so they are supposed to return the property, and they're illegally, or they didn't say illegally, but they said they are putting up, they have put up the tent without the permission of the ministry. And so it doesn't really say to until which date they are supposed to evict the area, but they have actually demanded 11 million yen in compensation for setting up the tent without permission.
Oh, it sounds like a big struggle. I mean, the kind of struggle that requires international support, which I'll get to in just a moment, but I did want to understand the demographic of the anti-nuke movement, and particularly I wanted to know if there was a significant contingent or support from the workers' movement.
Are you talking about labor unions?
Yes, labor unions.
Yes, labor unions are taking a large part of this movement, anti-nuke movement. Of course, they have been, but it hasn't really taken off. And this time, it is what we say is that anti-nuke movement is something that labor unions and also civil society and ordinary citizens have all got together and moving on along with each other. So this is actually involving trade unionists too. And as I mentioned earlier about the nuclear workers or workers at nuclear plants or decontamination workers, of course there's always labor issues, and we as labor unions we have to protect the workers' rights there. Of course, this is going to, if the Fukushima Daiichi is going to be decommissioned, there's going to be thousands and thousands of people working there. And of course, you know, at this time, the companies are slacking off their safety measures. And so we have to be the watchdogs. And that's why trade unionists and trade unions are taking major part of this movement.
It is really inspiring to see because in many parts of the world, there doesn't seem to be a unity between environmental activists and worker activists. So the fact that it's come together so well and cohesively in Japan is an inspiration to us all. But we're running out of time, and I really do want to give activists in Australia an opportunity to support their comrades in Japan. So what do activists in Japan need, and how can our listeners help?
I think it is. I have actually brought back some messages from people in Australia, especially Melbourne, to the anti-nuke movement activists and also people of Japan in the solidarity messages. And of course, Australia is a country that exports uranium, and that's one issue that we actually take notice on. So, in that sense, I think we would really appreciate it if you could have this movement against exporting uranium, and of course as well as anti-nuke movement, nuclear power movement. But for on both ends, we have to have these movements stronger. And of course, we're actually trying to have people in countries where Japan is trying to export its technology, nuclear power technology, too. So I think in every corner of this industry and of this business, that we have to keep strong solidarity and movement going. And I think it is also helpful, and I think they would be glad to hear, is even individual messages sent to the tent, say, we're with you, we support your movement. These small words, very simple messages that really encourage everyone. But I think at this moment, the nuclear industry is so powerful, and the government is so in on it with the industry. Even after two years since the disaster, we see it coming back already. The new government is already thinking of restarting other nuclear plants, and so we really need at this point any pressure that you can give us or give the Japanese government.
Chia,
that would be really great.
Chia, thank you so, so much for your time on the program. We are out of time, so we do have to leave it there. But thank you for coming on to the program at 7:30.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. That was Chia Matsumoto. She's an industrial activist, a union organizer and activist, and an anti-nuclear campaigner in Japan, speaking about the two-year anniversary of the Fukushima power plant disaster. And that is all we have time for here on Asia Pacific Currents. I'm going back to Diana in Studio One.
That's right. Thanks for that interview, Chia and Giselle. It's 9:31, which means we're all out of time. Do stay tuned for the Connolly Association and the other great programming coming up today on 3CR.